Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. Steve, I would love to not talk about Trump and the UN, but I don't see how we can avoid that.
Well, Jim, how are you?
I'm well. You know what? Here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what we're drinking, because we're back to drinking Isle of Jura scotch. Very good stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking a homebrew. You're drinking a Founders KBS.
Yeah, the elusive Founders KBS, which is one of the best beers that I've had. It just packs so much flavor. They only release it, once a year in very limited short supply, especially when you're not in Grand Rapids. So, which is where Founders is
headquartered. Founded. Correct. Yeah, founded. Right.
That's where you can found it. That's
a great brewery. I mean, we've got a friend of the show is a Founders guy. And anyway, good stuff. And yeah, I did jump right in. I should say we are Whiskey Congress. We are in our Cleveland studio. We are at Whiskey Congress on social media and whiskeycongress.com.
Why are you so frustrated, bro? You sound like you're really perturbed.
Do I sound pent up?
Yeah.
Do you
need a release?
Let's not go into that.
I know a place we can go.
After the show. All right. But seriously, here's why I'm frustrated. I took one for the team today, and I spent 42 minutes of my life watching the entirety of Trump's speech to the UN. And literally, he started with, since Election Day, our economy is doing great. Unemployment's at the lowest. Our stock exchange is an all-time high. And we're going to spend $700 billion this year to make sure our military is the strongest military ever. That's a campaign speech in front of the UN. He then went on to call out specifically North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela, threatening military intervention if needed, saying that it's his job to take care of his country. Excuse me, take care of his country first, just like it's all of your jobs, referring to the rest of the assembly. In his criticisms of North Korea, he referred to Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man, which is silly. For Mr. Don't Call Names, that's goofy. All right, you can find it funny. Find it funny. I'm all for funny.
I think here's my issue. When we're talking about adult issues that are
affecting the world and possibly
that are impacting our world, our national security, or we're talking about the various leaders in our country, or just in general,
around
we're
the world,
adults.
Right? Okay.
The name calling thing just it irks me. It always has from the time I was a kid. Maybe it's because I got called names as a kid. I just think it's bad form. Now, when I read that Donald Trump called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man, I'm sorry, I couldn't help but laugh. because it was.
Now, did
I
you
had
think of
images,
Elton John, or did you think of the movie The Rock? You're the Rocket Man,
right? No, I actually thought of. Just so many episodes of South Park of them making fun of Kim Jong-un and then just picturing him like riding a rocket through the sky.
So you picture like Dr. Strangelove, him on a rocket. Woo!
Yeah, pretty
that's
much.
That's a strange reference for people your age and my age even.
But either way. I thought it was a funny reference. And then there's the fact that this is the president of the United States who has
talking in front of the UN.
Right.
It's not like it was said in a weird moment at some, foundation thing. It was said in front of the fucking UN and it
the United Nations, yes, all the important countries in the world.
Including North Korea, a North Korean delegation. So it was just incredibly awkward.
I mean, it was poor
foolish.
Form. It was poor form. Obviously, it wasn't professional. But with this particular president, that
not
went
shocking.
That went out the window a long time ago. I mean, he started off his, you know, his if you really go back to, you know, Trump kicking off his run for president, it started on Comedy Central. They did the roast of Donald Trump, and he had, you know, everyone who they do the roast of Donald Trump, they do the roasts on Comedy Central, and it's the same people doing the roasts.
Right.
A bunch of comics that no one knows, you know, Lisa Lampanelli and Snoop Dogg.
They're not comics, you know, no one knows. But
yeah, whatever. Okay. Well, I haven't seen any of them do anything except a roast on Comedy Central.
Okay.
But okay, fine. So a bunch of hack comics get together on Comedy Central. They do the roast of whoever. This one was Donald Trump. And then at the end of it, that's when he, you know, makes a pretty strong reference to running for president of the United States. Okay. That's how he kind of breaks it to the world that not only is he thinking about this, he's strongly thinking about it. Right.
And then a lot of people. Okay, go ahead.
Right. And then you fast forward to the first debate. He makes the comment to Megyn Kelly about bleeding out of her eyes and ears and blah, 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 and Rosie O'Donnell and all that other stuff. And so he's just got a history of just having no
social filter.
What yeah, no filter. No. I don't know. I can't even think
that's
of
not even the right word, but that is a large part of what got him elected was right. People said, I want this guy because he says stupid shit just like me.
It's just the whole, oh, it's not politically correct.
Right, right.
Like it is, and I can relate to him. Like, no, you can't. You've never shit on a gold toilet. You can't relate to this guy, but okay.
You know, I wish that shit on a gold toilet was a joke or a reference to
it's
something.
It's not.
No, I know.
It's real.
No, I understand.
He's got a gold toilet in Trump Tower. I've seen it.
I know. I haven't seen it, actually, but I know. I mean, literally, he sits on gold to shit.
Listen, even beyond that, my man's got a jet. Okay, he's got a jet with his name on it. All right, you tell me, my former boss left our company and went to another company, and it was a amicable move. It was just an opportunity he couldn't turn down.
All right,
so we're sitting at lunch when he's made the decision that he's going to go to this company. And, you know, he's getting the details from it. And he says, hey, I need you to help me with something. I say, hey, how can I help you? He says, so the owner of the company says to me, like, since you're going to be going back and forth between the state that we're in and Ohio and, you know, your family's going to be there, you know, we want to make this easy as possible for you. So anytime you need to get back to Ohio or you want to bring your family out here, let us know. And you can use the private jet. We keep it in a hangar in Bowling Green. So you could have your wife go to Bowling Green or, you know, we'll come and get you whatever you need. So his question to me was, how often do I use that? And I said, bro, you have gotten to a level that I can no longer help you. You have surpassed me in the game of life because I have no idea.
Proper etiquette for private jet usage.
What the etiquette is for jet usage, okay? I can't relate to that. You, Farmer Bill, Tea Party Jack, super conservative Fred, you can't relate to a guy who's got his own name on a fucking jet. Okay? Just getting to the base. Now, we're a little bit off track, so we'll jump back into him, Trump at the UN. But, I mean, that's the guy that we're dealing with. He gives no fucks, and he lives a life that he has never been punished for. There's never been a repercussion for him for being an asshole. Essentially, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only repercussion I can think of is when he made the comments of Mexicans are murderers and rapists. He lost his gig at NBC, which essentially further pushed him into president or bust.
Right.
A lot of people think he didn't intend to go that far. I'm one of them. And just when he lost his gig at The Apprentice, he had no other thing to distract him or occupy him. But anyway. At the UN thing, he then went on to aggressively criticize, well, North Korea, I already mentioned, Iran, said the Iran deal was one of the worst deals ever made in U.S. history. And then he talked about Venezuela, and he said Venezuela is not a showcase in, you know, socialism not working the way it's supposed to. It's a showcase of socialism working as, he didn't say as intended, but he basically said, what's gone on in Venezuela is what happens when you have a socialist government. All of this stuff is canned speech, you know, teleprompter shit, because it plays to a narrative and plays to the, you know, nationalist, America first, anti-globalist crowd, right?
I mean, that's his base.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's his base, Bannon or not, that's his base. And so that's to be expected, par for the course. That doesn't really as much bother me. At least that's more in the mold of what we should be hearing out of him. You know, that first part of the speech talking about, you know, all the great things that are going on in the U.S., which, you know, are apparently all attributed to him, have nothing to do, you know, with the person who spent the last 8 years in office. It's
become par for the course.
Right. It's standard operating procedure for him. You know, everything has to start off like a campaign rally where he has to, you know, just tout and relive the glory days of, you know, winning the election. And then he slides into, you know, the written speech, you know, talking about whatever points that need to be covered at that particular time. There was nothing about it that really stood out. I do think the aggressive talk towards North Korea was interesting. And, you know, I want to pivot here a little bit because, you know, he talks about, you know, being aggressive and using military force and action against North Korea. But, you know, what we're seeing right now is what you and I have talked about many times, especially recently, is the aggressive sanctioning of not only North Korea, but going after and threatening other countries and, you know, and threatening to sanction them as well for their support of North Korea, or if they support North Korea, which I believe that is that, you know, state diplomatic action is the way that you have to approach this. And I know that you disagree because he's got all the resources to himself. There's the black market. And that was that even came, I forget, I heard about someone else shared your exact opinion. They said it's not going to hurt him because he doesn't care about the people and he's got everything that he needs, right? Like, so this is only going to hurt the people, and he's going to use that to
rally, you know, them further,
ramp up the rhetoric, and it may even push him over the edge. I disagree with you, I disagree with that person, but there are more people, I think, on your side than mine, although it seems that someone...
But the actions that are you taking someone are on is your
listening,
side, yeah.
Someone is listening to me or the people of my mindset. But I think... But then Kim Jong-un comes out and says, I'm going to test a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean, which then I'm sitting here saying, fucking HM, if you were fucking right about this, God damn it. So...
Let me throw what might sound like a bit of a crazy notion, but this popped into my head the other day.
Old Uncle Charlie.
No.
Curveball. That's...
Oh, sorry. Okay. What if we tried to offer a solution similar to what they gave Napoleon? Like, you're a crazy fucking dictator. We don't expect you to give up your own life. So we're just going to give you, go live on this island. We're going to live in luxury for the rest of your time and get the fuck out. I know that sounds nutty. But Kim Jong-un, if he has any reality button, which I still don't know if he does, has to know he's playing a losing game. If he has an out, kind of, I mean, we did this with a Shah in Iran, sort of, in the 50s, 60s, anyway. If you just tell this guy, look, you're boxed into a corner, you can't win with your current set of cards, fold, you have a personal out for you and your inner circle, and then North Korea rejoins with South Korea, and we try to get that economy going independent of the dictatorship that has been in place for that long. I mean,
where do you send him?
Crete. Where did they send Napoleon? Was it Crete? Send him to, give him a look, Trump Tower. Put him in Trump Tower. Give him a golden toilet seat. Let him and Trump talk about, you know, how they're
stop.
Big.
Stop.
You find a place.
No.
What was I'm?
I don't know.
Corsica, I think, is where they sent Napoleon.
Okay. No. That's.
Why not? Why not grant asylum? Say, look, you can't win. Get the fuck out. And let's get your
this
shit
is
right.
Why? Because I don't know if I believe anymore. If he believes if there's an ounce of him that believes that he will lose.
Okay, that's back into something I've talked about for weeks. Like, right. Does this guy have a reality button? I don't know.
Right. It just.
But
it
if you give him an out, I'm look. All right. First of all, this is kind of like so many of my other pie in the sky ideas. I know it's not going to happen. It's just, it strikes me as a better solution than anything else I've heard. Military options, I don't like them. Sanctions, I stand by my statement that they're just going to squeeze the already squeezed, and he'll be having lobster brunch with Jerry while everyone else is eating fat burger. Reference Straight Outta Compton.
Like, who the fuck is Jerry?
Straight Outta Compton, baby. Got it in there again. Hope you all are enjoying your lobster brunch. Steve, I'm just throwing that out there as a zany idea that's outside the box because it's the best I can do. If Kim Jong-un does attempt to detonate a hydrogen bomb, which for those who don't know, hydrogen bombs are substantially more powerful than plutonium bombs. There's fission and fusion bombs and a...
Stop.
All right.
Let me ask whatever. You this. So this is my question. So he says he wants to test a hydrogen bomb yep. over the Pacific Ocean. From a geological standpoint, is there concern about, like, could that cause a tsunami?
Steve, the answer is I don't know, and neither does anyone else because it's never been done.
Right. A hydrogen bomb
is like 1,000 times more powerful than the bomb we dropped on Nagasaki.
On Nagasaki, Hiroshima. Right. Like, so even if you, no matter where you blow it up, right? Like, it's still gonna, like, you're gonna feel that force is gonna reverberate down into the water and then cause
it's
the water
gonna push a whole lot of water somewhere, yes,
right? And so, we don't know where, I mean, like, that
no one knows.
Oh man,
the truth is,
so my question is, what is our response then, right? Because as soon as he does that, even though the bomb doesn't technically isn't aimed anywhere specific, right? I mean, like, just the repercussions. I mean, that could theoretically wipe out Guam.
Hawaii. Let me try to put it in a narrative because I think it answers itself. If I tell you I've got all these guns and I'm going to prove it to you, and I start shooting towards your house, you have no choice but to shoot back. I'm telling you I'm armed. I'm telling you I'm calling you the enemy. I'm telling you that I've got these big guns, and I'm going to shoot them near you, and here I am blazing away. How do you treat me as anything other than an active hostile threat? Mm. Which I think means, and this is a no-win situation, which I think means you bomb Pyongyang, which, I mean, at that point you're at war, and who's on whose side becomes really complicated and scary, because I think first of all, I'm not sure he's capable of doing it.
I'm not sure. Well, that was my next thing. I mean, he's saying this, but can he actually do it? That's a whole other thing. And does he really have more than one? You know, I mean, and I don't know.
These are things you can't bet wrong on.
Right. You really can't. And so the big issue is, how do you respond? Because the standard operating procedure is that you fight nuclear with nuclear, right? It's mutual destruction and blah, 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 blah. So the real thing is, if he fires off a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean, at that point in time, as soon as we see that thing leave the island, I'm assuming we go in, you know, I mean, like, we have plenty
of... My fear, Steve, is it doesn't leave the island until it's gone off. Like, we don't know what left the island has gone off. That is literally dropped by a boat, and it's not a missile that we can see in the air and blow up. That is literally, hey, it just happened.
Wait, that's what it is, or that's
what
your
fear?
That's
a possibility. That's my fear.
Oh, that's
I don't fear. I don't know. But
shitty thing to do. Like,
well,
I mean, because you're gonna blow up your own boat. Like,
no. The boat can be gone by the time it detonates, but it's placed and set to detonate, and we don't know until it has happened.
I don't know enough about ballistic missiles, or hydrogen bombs to really delve into what the capabilities are. that just of all the random shit that I've looked into, you know, different ways to package a hydrogen bomb have not crept into.
Hasn't been part of your
right. Haven't crept into my lexicon. So I
good word.
Know,
So let me throw a question back at you. If let's say the bomb goes off, whether it's a missile or a planted bomb or again, all right, you're saying it's cheating to blow up your own boat and your own people. I don't think that's beyond his.
It's not.
So if that happens, do we have any option other than military strike?
No.
Right?
We have to. Now, I think that we can go.
I think we have to do it with support from others, but.
Well, and the big question then at that point in time, the only question is what is China doing? Right?
Oh, China and Russia.
China's more important. China, to me, China's more important. We can handle Russia to a degree, but China's more important. I worry about, like, China's the bigger one there, right? A lot of it based on proximity, but also based on capability, and then also just overall, you know, there's a money factor there as well. And so I think we need to know, I think that somehow back channel, they have to go to China and say, listen, if he does this. But I also think China knows whether he can or he can't. Right? Don't let them fool you that they don't. Oh, we don't know what's going on that island over there. That's literally
I would bet you that they have more intelligence.
They know exactly what the fuck is going on that island. They know exactly what the fuck is going on that island, and that's why the key has always been to get China to deal with this. Right, China has refused to deal with it, and part of my thinking is because they know what he can and can't do. He can fire a bunch of shitty, you know, just a bunch of shitty regular missiles. All right, I mean, as much as crazy as that sounds,
yeah,
right. I mean, like,
oh, that's all. Okay,
right. I mean, but he can do that, but he doesn't have anything nuclear, and he doesn't have a fucking hydrogen bomb. So China not doing anything and not raising any sort of alert, that's them saying, just fucking relax. Let them throw the temper tantrum.
Or also saying, like, you know, knowing that they have that card to play. You, the United States, need to do things the way we want because we are your one intervening force in this fucking mess. But here's what scares me. I'm convinced Kim Jong-un is completely unhinged. Whether he has a reality button, I don't know.
He has done a good job of convincing me that you're closer to being right on this than I am. I was under the assumption that he was, you know, a narcissist and he loved, you know, playing
tough guy Rambo, leader. Right?
And I think that maybe there was a time where I was right, but I think that his reality strip is fading and going away very quickly.
So, let me sort of changing gears. Today, Donald Trump is in Fort Myers, Florida, and he's given a speech, and he's talking about hurricanes and how, you know, he's, you know, the resiliency of everybody, and they're doing great. And he says, you know, it's great to see you all here, and Vice President Pence is here, and Melania really wanted to be here too, and she was standing right fucking next to him. I'm not saying this to be dickish or funny. I'm starting to wonder if Trump is seriously, whether it's mental anguish, breakdown, whatever, or is he falling apart mentally? Because we've got two crazy people in this fucking situation. That's a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, the reality is that Trump is in his 70s, right?
He's 70, and 71, 72,
yeah,
somewhere
yeah,
there.
I mean,
right.
He's in his 70s, which,
look,
you know,
are people in their 30s that are fucked in the head, and there's people in their 90s that are lucid, but yeah, the older you get, the more...
Right. And so he's in his 70s. This isn't the first time we've seen something like this with him. And so there's definitely a rising concern about his mental faculties, his ability to, you know, lead effectively. And you have to wonder if there's something imminent coming, right? Are these
This is signs, the first time I've thought that.
Right. Are there signs... Are these signs of a possible stroke that are coming? Are these signs of dementia? Is it Alzheimer's? Is it,
imagine being in any situation, standing next to your wife and saying, My wife wanted to be here but couldn't.
Or not. I mean, just imagine this, Jim. You and I walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "Hey, Jim, where's Steve?" And you're just like, he really wanted to come here, but he couldn't. And you know, the bartender's just like, "Okay, well."
It looks a lot like Steve's standing next to you.
Pretty sure he's standing right next to you, and you're like, "Oh, hey, yeah, yeah." I mean, I only saw a brief clip of it.
Me too.
And so I couldn't see what Melania's response was going to be, or what her response was. And
I think we got in her head. I think there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Give me back to Slovenia would have been her,
which really of all places. Although I've never been to Slovenia,
I'm thinking better than standing next to Donald Trump.
Listen, Donald Trump's, you know, mental faculties aside, Kim Jong-un has presented himself as much more of a problem than any of his predecessors prior to him.
Right.
Because the North Korean Kim family have been kind of annoying thorns in the side of the U.S. for 50 years.
Yeah, 60 years.
And they've always, you know, talked a big game, but typically they talk that game and then we ease up some sanctions, we allow more food into the country for the people, and they typically quiet down and, you know, you don't hear from them again for a decade. This Kim is, he's devolving at a much faster rate than any of his predecessors, and he's a young man.
Yeah.
And so that's what's scary. It'd be different if he were older, then we would be having the same conversation about him as we're having about Trump. Is it dementia? Is it Alzheimer's? Is he just becoming crazy in his old age? But this kid is younger than I am. By a few years. I think he's like in his early 30s.
He's in early 30s.
Right. And so, I mean, what's scary about it is you can't blame it on those things. Now we're just talking about a kid who's
delusional.
Right. And that's terrifying. And it's not getting better. It's getting worse. And he did call Trump a dotard, by the way.
Which is awesome.
Which I don't know what a dotard is.
So I do.
Of course you do.
I had much more time on my hands lately. So it's a translation from Korean. It basically means a doddering old fool. Okay,
that's actually pretty accurate, but okay.
Yeah. So basically it means an out of touch old man. As opposed to
an out of touch insane young man.
Yeah, right. Well, right. I mean, got it. But the problem is when you have two, so look, dating back to the George W. Bush Axis of Evil speech, which I think was a catastrophically foolish thing by a really bad president. At least in that case, you were dealing with a guy who knew that he had to listen to other people, meaning George W. Bush. Follow it with Obama. Obama was, again, like him or not, kept his cool under damn near every situation. He didn't always do things people liked, but he kept his cool, and he generally said the right things on the international stage. He made lots of mistakes, I think, in the international affairs, you know, decisions in the Middle East and whatever, but he didn't say and do crazy shit. And I never thought he could get baited into doing something impulsive. Right now, we've got two people who I believe if you overcooked their, or in this case, undercooked their steak, might order an execution. And I mean that in the sense of causing world havoc because some minor slight offended them. And they're pushing each other's buttons.
You know, I did read a crazy story about Kim Jong-un and, you know, the way he's ordered the executions of people that have, you know, slighted him or he felt that were enemies. Like,
or you were trying to plot against him, whatever, yeah.
There was a horrible one where there was a band who...
Like a musical band?
A musical band that, I forget what they had done. Like they had played, it was either the type of music they played or something I think they had a party. I guess there's a big no pornography thing in North Korea, which,
okay.
Reason number seven.
Not to like.
I could never
do. Yeah, right.
But I guess he took each member of the band, strapped them to anti-aircraft guns, and then fired the guns. The guns go off. Anti-aircraft missile.
It's a missile, right?
Obviously a big, huge thing. They fire them off. The people basically are ripped apart instantly. And then he had tanks ride over the area where their remains had fallen to just kind of put a little extra emphasis
on. I had never heard. That's fucking crazier than.
Right. And that's why I'm definitely coming over to the side that this guy is beyond reach. It was from people that have defected, people who, you know, spent time there. The one guy who was a defector said he was like, they gathered a crowd of 10,000 people to watch get strapped to these anti-aircraft missiles and basically obliterated when someone hit a button and then ran over by a tank. Like, he was forced to watch it. And then that's when that particular person knew that he had to, you know, get out of North Korea. So the guy is clearly, we're dealing with a psychopath. We're dealing with a sociopath. The likes, maybe, I don't know, modern era, if we've seen before.
I mean, as bad as his dad was, he appears to be worse.
Yes.
And I think that that's typical, right? If you have delusion passed on to delusion, it only gets stronger. And, you know, when your country is starving and you're fat,
it's just everything else. I mean,
I'm not fat shaming Kim Jong Un, but I'm just saying that literally your populace is dying of starvation, right.
and you're beyond well fed.
Yes,
you know, you look at it on the radar, and everything is dark except for where Kim Jong Un is.
Right,
right.
We've talked about that before. That is one of the most telling.
And I've gone and pulled it up multiple times for other people. And it's, this is doctored. This can't be real. And it's just like, no, it's very real. If you know anything, the fake out. If you know anything about it, then it's like you realize how real it is and just how scary it is. Because when you start to kind of put the whole picture together, just how cruel he is to his own people, how he executes people for the slightest slight, and, you know, the rhetoric coming out of his camp to the international community about what they're going to do. You know, the only thing I can say is that they're smart enough to say that they were smart enough to say they're not going to fire that or shoot that hydrogen bomb at the U.S. You know, like directly at us. They're like, oh, we're going to test it over the ocean. Like they're playing the game of, you know, Velociraptor right now. They're testing the boundaries. They're pushing it. But they're not just coming out and being direct. So, I mean, at least there is some mode of control there. But, I mean, it's obviously getting worse. You know, I mean, and the only hope is just that he's just delusional. He's just insane. He's delusional. He's insane. But a lot of, and hopefully more of this is about pushing Trump's buttons and pissing Trump off because he knows that he can.
And maybe instilling, so part of his ability to maintain power is probably, maintaining fear amongst his own people. And in the past, you could say George Bush wants this or Obama wants this, but now you've got the greatest hits. I mean, you've got the President of the United States saying this shit in front of the UN. You don't need to make it up anymore. You can just hit play. So maybe part of it is his desire to stay in control of his own people because, and this is again, if he has a reality button, you know, does he want to keep his own people saying, we do need you to stand up to this tyrant with the orange hair? Maybe. I don't know. But it's so really fucked up.
It's really if and buts and candy and nuts, you know?
I mean, it's why they pay intelligence people to know this shit much better than we do, but it is a scary time.
I really just hope they're doing their job right now.
Me too. Me too. And so then, if we can bring it back domestic, we've heard about the Trump administration's desire to kill Obamacare since the beginnings of the campaign. And it sounded like this week, the Graham Cassidy bill might actually take down the Affordable Care Act. It kills me when I hear people say that they want to take it down because it has Obama's name on it. Okay. Actually it doesn't, but it's gained that term.
Well,
whatever.
You know what? Here's the thing. Look, don't brush over that. Because you have to wonder. Well, the Affordable Care Act is a very close cousin to what the Heritage Foundation put together, and which was used by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
Now, the Heritage Foundation is a very conservative group, right?
Yeah.
I mean, does it get much more conservative than the Heritage Foundation? And if you don't know who and what they are, go look them up. But that's where this came from, right? Obama literally said, I need that. And the reason why he took that, because, yeah, he probably believed that it could work, but it was more a... realized that's my humidor. I was looking for it earlier. Right, completely
side note to people who are not watching the show. Yes, the humidor you left here when you're in the middle of your move is still here.
Got it. Okay. Anyway, sorry for the squirrel.
Mystery, exactly. Squirrel is exactly.
So Obama takes this from the Heritage Foundation, and part of the reason, a big part of the reason why he does that is for... is looking for something to get bipartisan support, right? He says, not only do I believe that, I think that this plan can work with some tweaking, but if I pull it from the Heritage Foundation, knowing that a Republican, Mitt Romney, has used this before to a certain level of success in Massachusetts, can we tweak it to use on a national scale and get bipartisan support, Republican, Democrats, look, where he's saying, look, I'm using your plan.
And also to fix a major financial disaster in our country.
Exactly. Right? I'm going to use your plan to help fix this. Sign on. And because it was Obama, they said no. Yes, that's our plan.
No, they didn't say no. They said, this is a social attack. This is a social... Yes. I mean, they turned it from no into the fuck no isn't even strong enough. It was, you are trying to put death panels. Grandma is going to get dragged in front of death panels. They're
raping my baby. It was everything. It was... They pulled out all the guns and just started firing them directly at Obama. So... I don't think that we can overlook the whole Obamacare thing, because who gave it the name Obamacare, right? It wasn't Obama. One of Obama's biggest thing was, the under no circumstances do I want you to use my name in this. Do not call it the Barack. Don't call it the Obama. Don't call it the Barry O. Don't call it anything related to me, because of what's going on right now. He knew that if they put his name on it, like, if they actually named it after him.
But by the time the campaign against Romney comes around, he owns it, right? Romney called it Obamacare, and he said, sorry, I call it that.
Now, that's the key. That wasn't an accident. Romney did that on purpose.
Right.
Right? Romney
did it. But then Obama said, I like it.
Right. But no. At that point in time, what choice does he have? He can't backpedal and say, no, don't put my name on it, right? Because then it's just like, well, why don't you want your name on it? Don't you have faith in it?
Right. I mean, that's a no-win. That's a no-win.
And Romney knew it. The Republicans knew it. That's why Romney did it. That wasn't an accident. You don't just go and say, oh, Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act. Like, right. There's no way to make that slip. That was by design. And I'm not attacking you.
No, I'm not feeling attacked at all.
But what I'm saying is, that was by design, by the Republicans, by Mitt Romney's camp, right, to immediately put to discredit the Affordable Care Act because it was called Obamacare. And then it caught like wildfire.
And one of the late night shows, I don't remember which one it was, literally did a thing where they walked around and said, do you support the Affordable Care Act? Oh, absolutely. Well, how do you feel about Obamacare? Oh, it's terrible.
That's been done. Late night shows, and different organizations, done polling. I mean, there's even just Michael Steele. Okay, Steele,
yeah.
Who was a former
head of the RNC,
of the Republican National Committee, said that he said he can tell you that if the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, was called Bush Care, or if it was called,
Patriot Care,
or AmeriCare, or anything other than Obamacare, or the exact same plan was brought to the table by anyone else except Obama, we wouldn't be where we are today with healthcare. Because by now, right, by now we would have been in the stage where, you know, every bill that gets passed, you add amendments, right? You add amendments to change it. You say, all right, we like this, we don't like that, we need this, we don't need that. And but that's where we would be with it. Like, we haven't done any amendments with the Affordable Care Act because
they've been too busy talking about tearing it down.
Right, they've been too busy tearing it down. But they also have come up with absolutely nothing to replace it. And everything that they're doing right now is a rush job, just doing it just to do it. Right? So they're just saying, okay, look at it, rip it apart, and whatever. Like, if we just rip a bunch of limbs off of it, then we still have a tree that you can call, you know, a healthcare bill, and we can submit that, and hopefully everybody will sign on.
And well, a lot of it comes down to the, as unpopular as Obamacare was when it got pushed through from a theoretical standpoint, once it got implemented, a lot of people benefited from it. Now, I'm not saying it's not a flawed bill. I've talked about how to, I would recommend fixing it on some of my YouTube rants, and I'll do more of those. But a lot of people are saying, hey, wait a minute, this was maybe not perfect, but it's a whole lot better than it was.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, pretty much the whole state of Kentucky, right? I mean, that's a little bit of hyperbole, but a large percentage of the state of Kentucky, the home state of the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, if they repeal Obamacare, you know, a good portion of his state, Mitch McConnell, they lose health care. And there's no good, clear way for them to get it back. Right, because there's so many people out of work there. There's so many people who are below the poverty line, and even if they are working, they're barely doing it. They're like, without the Affordable Care Act, they wouldn't be insured. Not to mention, they have it's a population that is riddled with a number of
opioid crisis and everything
between
else,
the opioid crisis, between diabetes, between high blood pressure, you know, obesity, all those things that are pre-existing conditions. There's no, they're almost uninsurable under anything that's been presented by the GOP.
And so Lindsey Graham and Senator Cassidy proposed the Graham-Cassidy Act, and Jimmy Kimmel went on the air and just attacked Senator Cassidy. Had been, is he from Louisiana?
Yes.
Okay. You know, he had previously said, like, I won't support a bill that doesn't protect people with pre-existing conditions. And Jimmy Kimmel, who had previously come under fire for going political when he should have stayed in his lane and stuck to being a talk show host, but he had a newborn son who had a lot of healthcare issues, and if not for his ability to have health insurance and to be protected from pre-existing conditional regulations, you know, he believes his son may not have gotten the care he did. He certainly believes he didn't have the financial, you know, he knew he had the financial
right. Well, I mean, his ability. Son, the Affordable Care Act helped, but I mean, in reality, Jimmy Kimmel even pointed out,
yeah,
listen, I make, you know, millions of dollars. I have the money to be able to take care of my son. But
if I didn't,
there's no way my son would be here right now, you know, or he would have the help that he needs, which is a great point to make by him. And there's a comparison to be drawn there because, you know, and we could talk about, you know, kind of the whole thing with athletes taking a stand for social injustice. But with what Jimmy Kimmel is doing is, listen, I've got plenty of money. I also have health insurance. I have very good health insurance. But the reality is that I'm in the 1%. And so there's 99% of the rest of the country where this is going to impact them at different levels. And the further you get down that ladder of income and earning, the harder things get. And so allowing the insurance companies to, you know, essentially gouge people and, you know, exclude people because, you know, like, well,
you're not a good bet.
Like we don't want to bet on you. So we want to limit the pool to only the healthiest people. And then everyone else, you get put in a separate pool because you're ill, because you're sick, because you have a pre-existing condition. You're going to put you in a separate pool, and you're going to have to pay more, so much more, that you're probably not going to be able to afford it, and so you don't get it, right? And that's the basic premise of what's going on, right?
Yeah, like absolutely.
The insurance companies want to isolate the healthy people, isolate the unhealthy people, make the unhealthy people pay a lot more, and then if you can't pay it, oh well, tough luck, see you later.
And they'll just throw you into the system and say, fend for yourself, which, again, if you let me rant about healthcare, I'll do it in a way that nobody wants. I mean,
like, and that's the basic premise. And so, and then a lot of conservatives and, you know, generally healthy people who have, you know, a lot of the people who are making if you have a pre-existing condition like diabetes or high blood pressure or, you know, cancer or, like, by the way, they're considering pregnancy a pre-existing condition, right? Like, so if you, let's say you're pregnant and like, let's say you're a woman and you get knocked up, right? And then you switch jobs somewhere in, you know, like during your pregnancy, there's a chance that you may not be covered under some of these iterations of healthcare that they could reject you or deny you because you being pregnant is a pre-existing condition, or they can make you pay exponentially more.
Right.
Right. Now, some people say, well, that's fair. And a lot of people go to the, well, I'm healthy and I don't want to have to pay for you, so I shouldn't have to pay more. But this is how insurance works. Everybody puts into the pot in the hopes that more people are healthy than not. And the few people that are sick get the benefit of it. And if you're not, you don't have to worry about it. But that's insurance. It's like car insurance.
If you don't have a car accident, right, you don't benefit from car accident, like, insurance.
If you're not a bad driver, then guess what? It's mandated by the state that you have car insurance, right? And if you don't, there's pretty heavy penalties for it. But no matter what, if you never get into an accident in your life, you still are paying insurance for everybody else. You're paying for the young kids that are bad drivers. You're paying for the drunk drivers.
You're paying for the gym, the guy that killed a deer that committed suicide coming over a fucking divider on I-80 4 years ago, whatever.
A good friend of mine in Michigan just took out a deer, you know, going on whatever, 75 or whatever that is. That's how insurance works, folks. That is how it works. You get it in case.
I paid insurance for a long time and got nothing for it. Then a deer committed suicide on my really pretty car.
Insurance has never been, like, insurance is only a good investment if you need it, right? Other than that,
but it only works as an investment if you all put in and say, in the unlikely event that I'm that person, I will be saved from this, right, and I'm willing to take the responsibility, pay the price, whatever.
Right, and then people are bitching. They're just like, oh, well, I mean, if I don't want it, then I shouldn't have to pay for it. Like, guess what? If you don't want car insurance, then your only fucking option is to not have a car.
Right?
Right?
And all right, we can go down this road for a long time.
But I think it's important that we talk about what insurance is, we talk about how it works, and also, here's the other part. The Affordable Care Act isn't health care. The Affordable Care Act is
health insurance control.
It's a law to control the insurance companies to prevent them from fucking you, right? Now, to a certain degree, now this is why the insurance companies are who and what they are, is they have some really smart lawyers and some really smart people who work for them who say, this is how we're going to work.
That's what an actuary is, right?
This is how we're going to work around this law. Right, we're still like, we can't fuck them the way we used to fuck them, so we're gonna have to find a new way to fuck them. And they did a really good job of figuring it out, right? Like, so as pissed off as everybody wants to be at Obama and Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, in reality, everyone should be targeting their missiles at the fucking insurance companies, because the insurance companies are the ones who are saying, you know what, we're just actually gonna charge you more because we don't like this law. There's no actual reason why we're going to
charge you more because we need to keep our CEOs making their $20 million a year, and we're not going to risk.
Not even going into that aspect, right? The insurance companies looked at it and said, all right, bottom line.
We want to stay profitable. Bottom line. Fuck you.
There's a chance that we can make less money if we have to insure more people and we don't have to charge them more. So what we'll do is, fine, we'll insure you if you have a pre-existing condition, but this is how we're going to work our way around it. We're going to, and the insurance companies did this on purpose, right? They did this on purpose where they said, all right, not only are we, like, fine, You're going to make us
cover, actually take care of the people we're getting paid to take care
of. Right. You're going to make us take care of people with pre-existing conditions. Okay, fine. Then those places where there are a lot of people with pre-existing conditions or there's not a big enough population to balance things out, we're just going to pull out.
Yep.
We're just going to pull out. Right? Now, will we lose money if we stay? No, not necessarily. But we're going to pull out. Right? And we're going to pull out of other markets and we're going to say that we're losing money when in reality they're making money. They're still making a profit, but the profit that they're making isn't as big. Right? So then health and health insurance and healthcare becomes about profit margins. Right?
And 100% it's about.
Well, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that creates
like,
a cage. Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, so now you have healthcare and health insurance that's about profit margins. And that's how and that's how the insurance companies make their decisions, right? But everyone, all the Trumpians and the conservatives, the GOP, they want to get pissed off at everybody, right? It's Obama's fault. It's the ACA's fault. It's the left. It's the Democrats. It's socialism. It's Bernie. It's blah, 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 blah.
No, it's Obama's fault.
But it's Obama's
fault. But so the Graham Cassidy bill looked like it might do what they've been talking about for months and actually repeal and replace Obamacare. And he said Jimmy Kimmel had his back and forth with Senator Cassidy, and then Mitch McConnell said he will not put it to a vote unless they have the votes or nearly have the votes, and once again John McCain jumped in and said, "Nope,
not going to do it."
I love John McCain.
Well, you know what?
I've been a John McCain guy. I mean, I didn't vote for him, but
You know,
I've always respected and liked John McCain.
John McCain, there was concern because Lindsey Graham and John McCain are very close. Lindsey Graham is
extremely close.
Lindsey Graham is a co-sponsor of the Graham Cassidy bill. His name is on it. And so people thought that, you know, McCain would definitely go and support his friend.
Yeah.
And it was a concern. Like I was telling you earlier,
when I heard that Lindsey Graham was on, I'm like, fuck, we lost that one.
Yeah, I mean, I heard earlier there was a congressman, I forget where he was from, who said, it was a Democratic congressman who said, you know, the same thing that you said, that with Lindsey Graham's name on it, it's hard to see John McCain doing the same thing he did last time with the dramatic thumbs down, you know. But McCain comes out today. I was, you know, really busy at work, but I got an alert on my phone and I saw that, you know, breaking news, John McCain says that he can't support the bill and there's a lot of unanswered questions. And I actually retweeted John McCain's tweet because that's actually how he put it out, was via a tweet. I retweeted that on Whiskey Congress, our Twitter page, just because I thought that was a pretty big moment. And so it looks like, you know, with McCain not supporting it, and pretty much the same people who weren't supporting it before aren't supporting it now, then you have to wonder, what does Mitch McConnell say? Okay, well, I'm not doing this.
And this is something you talked about a couple weeks ago when you said there are so few days left in session for them to get this done. So they've only got like 6 days left of... Maybe I'm understating the number.
I think either way,
before they go to their recess and go home.
I think as from right now, I think they only have maybe like 12 days left, right? And so, which is not enough time to, like, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean,
the clock's ticking.
Are they gonna put this to a vote? Right. So if they put this to a vote, if they put the Graham Cassidy bill to a vote, which they said they're gonna do next week. And they wait on that. By the time they get to a vote, then they're legitimately going to have about a week left of actual days to work, because then they have to go back home to their districts and do work in those districts, which means that they're not going to have the benefit of all being in Washington to work on a bill together and talk and put everything together. Now, part of me says that's kind of bullshit because, you know, there's so many different ways to work and share.
You and I can do show from 400 miles apart.
Right, you and I can do a show from far apart. We can edit a document together. You know, all the different things you can do with technology and communication.
Sometimes in Congress still works with quill pens and,
right.
And
a lot of ink. It's like, how are you guys, why do you guys all have to be in Washington? But, and maybe it has something to do with the staffers or whatever. But again,
I'm sure it does.
All that shit can be done whether they're in D.C. or they're back in their districts. Now, I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but the point being that if, according to them, they can only do this when they're in session, then they're running out of time. They're just about out of time. Like, this is a last-ditch effort, and if, you know, McConnell doesn't put it to vote next week, like he said he was going to do, if they had the votes, then they're essentially out of time to get health care taken care of. Now, listen, Trump's still got another 3 years in office.
Yeah.
But in reality, 2018 is the reason why they have to, they're pushing this is because if by 2018 you don't have the, you know, repeal and replace of Obamacare, you don't have tax reform, you don't have a wall, then essentially you don't have any of the things that you promised that you were going to have on day one. And that's when their fear is that they will start to lose their base. And their base breaks up. And once the base breaks up, they become extremely vulnerable. And
getting primaried,
you could,
right?
You could, right. You could theoretically see, you could see a flip of the, you could see a flip of Congress, right? Now, all of a sudden, you see a flip of Congress. You could possibly, I doubt it, but you could see a flip of the Senate. And if you start to see these sort of things, now all of a sudden, they have less power. They have less ability to make changes. And then, if once the Democrats gain control of either or the House or the Senate, then you could kiss any of that shit goodbye.
And that changes a whole bunch of things that don't get talked about a lot, right? Because, you know, right now, it's very hard for a Democrat to push things into an investigation committee. You need to have the votes. So the fact that there is this Russia investigation is actually amazing given the state of affairs. And, you know, if the Democrats gained control of either House of Congress or, dare I say, both, that changes the world for the administration dramatically. I mean, we saw that with Obama trying to do things in the face of a Republican-controlled House and Senate. All right, we've talked literally Trump for an hour, and it's just unavoidable. Included in that, though, is Betsy DeVos has kind of somewhat under the radar taken down another Obama administration policy, and that was their policy on educational facilities and sexual.
Well, let me jump in here, and I'll. Like, I'm going to, let me take this over a little bit.
Go.
So the Obama administration issued a letter to their educational colleague, their higher educational colleagues, you know, like essentially all the colleges and universities across the country on how to deal with sexual assault on campus. In that memo, essentially what they said was instead of taking almost beyond a reasonable doubt approach, you take a preponderance of the evidence approach, right? Which is a lower standard of how to review these sort of issues. So
don't talk about OJ. Don't.
So when you're on, so essentially what they're saying is the Obama administration issues a memo saying when you have a case of sexual assault, you don't have to have rock solid,
beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
Beyond a reasonable doubt amount of evidence to, you know, find a person, you know, guilty,
culpable,
more or less, or culpable of this. You could say it's more likely than not that the accused did this, and then you take whatever disciplinary action that you need to take, whether it's a suspension or
expulsion
or what have you, right? Now, this is separate from a criminal investigation, right? Like, this is something that
institutional
happens.
This is not
right.
Criminal.
This is within the institution. This happens along a parallel track of a criminal investigation if it gets to that point, depending on what the scenario is. So take the Stanford swimmer case where the kid rapes the girl in the alley. According to the Obama administration, what could have happened there is, like, look, we don't need to wait for the criminal courts to shake out. You know, we have witnesses who say they who saw what they saw.
Hillary broke the event up, yes.
Right. I mean, we have the girl who said what she said, and then we have the guy who, you know, wasn't a great whatever. Then they could have, the, you know, Stanford could have said easily, you know, you're expelled from school and, you know, never return and blah, 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 blah. And now what Betsy Davis has done and the Trump administration, they've come in and said, we're rescinding that memo. So you need a higher burden of proof. You need to use a higher burden of proof because you need to give the accused a fair opportunity. They need to have due process. You can't expel, suspend a person for these sort of crimes without giving them a fair shake. Now, I have very mixed emotions about this. Very mixed. To the feminists in our crowd that listen to our show, they may not like the fact that I waver on this because there is the aspect that I'm coming from the perspective, I was a student athlete on campus, right? And one of the biggest fears that I had on campus was that something that I did would be misunderstood or perceived in the wrong light, and I would be accused of rape. Right, like that as a student athlete, as a male, as a large black male,
with parties and a lot of alcohol, with parties and sex and a lot of
all that other stuff. One of my fears was, after a night where I thought the sex was consensual, the girl would say, "You know what?
I don't even want to say
she regrets it. That she turns around and says, for whatever reason, that it wasn't consensual, and there was a miscommunication between the two of us." Or whatever, and then I'm in a situation where I'm trying to, you know, prove my innocence to the university, to the team, because you get accused of sexual assault and you're a scholarship athlete, then now your ability to go to school is immediately in jeopardy, right? And then on top of that, there's the criminal aspect, right? So I could be going to jail, I could be losing my scholarship, could have to deal with the fact that I may have to register as a sex offender. All those negative things go into your mind on an accusation like this. And so your fear is that, you know, you're with the person, you think everything is fine, is going fine, has gone fine. And then, you know, the next day or a week later or, you know, a certain time down the road, you find out that it wasn't fine. And it blindsides you. And I have a conscience. Right. And so that's why, and it's important. And maybe that's why for me, I was afraid of it and I thought about it and I was
extricated yourself.
I was careful. Yeah. Right. I was careful. I was smart. If there was a girl who was passed out, then my first instinct wasn't, well, let's see where this goes. No, it was actually, let's try to get her. Well, no, I mean, if there was a girl who was passed out at a party or she was beyond drunk, I took it upon myself to try to figure out a way to get that girl to a safe place, right? Whether it's pick her up, and if it was in the dorms, take her back to her dorm room. If you could figure out how to get her in her room, or
get her to an RA,
or you know, like give her with the RA, give her, you know, like pass her to Kate or something like that. Kate was our RA, who was
okay. Enough about Kate.
No, I mean, she was just Kate. Like, I never had an incident with Kate. Like, Kate was just a cool RA. She was good for us to have on our floor, but. Like, that was my thought process was, you know, it was something that, like, genuinely scared me, which is good.
Yeah, right?
Which is good. I'm not to say that I was going to do something that I shouldn't have done or something along those lines, but it helped me to not do something that I wasn't supposed to do. That being said, I still had sex in college. I had sex while I was drinking, while the girl was drinking. And the reality is that it was still there. Right, the risk was still there. And so we just talked about this a couple weeks ago, we've seen incidents where someone was accused of something and they didn't do it. And the evidence didn't support it. You know, the girl comes out and she wasn't telling the truth. You had the case in Virginia where the story was, it seemed like it was made up. You know, Rolling Stone got involved and
different story. Okay, go ahead, right. Sorry.
I'm sorry. This is boring you.
No, it's not boring. keep rolling.
Okay. So, but you have the situation in Virginia where, you know, looks like the girl made the story up or made up a large portion of the story. Rolling Stone gets involved. They go out and they support the girl. And, you know, they're attacking different people, you know, males on campus. And then those guys are cast in the light of being guilty. And then it comes out that there's it actually couldn't have happened and it wasn't true. But those guys' reputations, they're cooked what. Right, you have the Duke rape case.
I mean,
right?
that's the ultimate example, right?
The Duke rape case, I mean, that actually just never happened, right? I mean, other than, I mean, the girl was there.
Yeah, the Duke lacrosse team was accused of sexually assaulting a woman at an off-campus party.
And that's one where people wanted
everything
that.
Everything played into that. Oh, my
there's
gosh.
There's a lot, like, you want to talk about the race factor. It was the opposite there. Because they were the white elitist, it was Duke, the prostitute or the stripper or whatever, she was black. And, you know, she was black and she had kids and supported. And then how could they do this to her? It's, like, you know, white and white supremacy and elitist and blah, 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 blah. And in that situation,
opinion branded those.
And those kids' reputation, I don't know if they can ever, like, they ended up being vindicated at the last
A couple
minute.
Years later, right?
Right. I mean, but even still, I don't know if those kids' lives will ever be right. Right. And that's the part of me that says we have to be very careful by giving carte blanche and allowing kangaroo courts in these sort of situations. Like, it needs to be fair. We need to treat it like, even though it's college and even though it doesn't have the same standard as an actual court of law, there still needs to be the idea of due process and civil liberties. We have to take that into account because a false accusation, even if it comes out after the fact. Right. Like, well, yes, she made the accusation, but she's recanting it now. It's too late. Right. And if you go through the process of suspending someone or expelling someone, you know, removing their scholarship, then what are the chances? Is the school going to give the kid a scholarship back?
Or is the next school going to take a chance?
Right. Are they going to take a chance on him and say, yeah, well, she recanted, but maybe you said something to her or maybe somebody else or whatever. And so
it's a dangerous line.
Dangerous line. So there are a lot of people who are very upset about this. And the concern is if the schools themselves don't do this the right way, if they begin to go back to taking sexual assaults and sweeping them under the rug, right? Or the situation with the Stanford rape case, you know, like, that situation was as out in the open as could be, and you had the criminal court, the judge basically sweeps it under the rug by saying, all right, yeah, you're guilty, but since we don't want this to harm
you
too bad.
This could hurt you down the road.
Right, this could hurt you down the road. We're going to give you a slap on the wrist, right? Like, and so that's where the advocates on the side of the victims are saying, we can't go back there, right? We can't go back there. But I think there has to be some advocacy for the accused because not every accused person is guilty of a crime or what they're being accused of.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a delicate thing.
It's a very delicate thing.
I will say this, that I want to avoid saying because Betsy DeVos did this or because the Trump official did this, it is wrong or it's whatever. I do, my ears do perk up whenever I hear, you know, this Obama thing is being overturned because that seems to be modus operandi right now for the Trump administration. It's like, if it has Obama's stamp of approval on it, we will undo it just to rally our base.
And that's true. And I think that I fully wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that's why we have to,
we have to talk about this.
We have to be ever
in an honest, logical way.
And we have to look at every single thing that they do. And because the problem is not everything that the Trump administration does is going to be
inherently evil
or inherently evil or criminal or, you know, by default, it's going to be racist or white supremacist or whatever we're throwing out there at them. Right. Like, some of the things that they do may make sense. We're going to have to dig through. We're going to have to shovel a lot of shit to get there.
Fair enough.
Right. And I mean, we're not even, you know,
we need bigger shovels.
We're less than a quarter of the way in. And we, you know, I mean, we are just neck deep in shit that we've shoveled. But this is one that is not necessarily the worst thing that they've done. Now, it definitely has the potential to go sideways because if schools start, you know, leaning too much, too far on the side of the accused, and they start forcing these girls into hiding, or they start forcing these girls and saying the girls feel like they can't win and that there's no point in coming out, then they've definitely fucked up. So there has to be we have to hope that they can navigate this the appropriate way, but we can't sacrifice people's lives in terms of the accused, because that's not fair either.
Are you suggesting we should be logical and take a case-by-case approach and deal with things on an adult level? See, that's crazy.
I know. It's madness.
You're crazy.
It's madness.
All right. I wanted one more thing, though. We have talked about Colin Kaepernick and the NFL protests so many times, and I've been I went down the rabbit hole a couple times on Facebook this week, and I
stop.
No, don't you. You do the same fucking thing. Don't you lecture me.
I don't go that. I don't go that far.
You don't know how far I went.
I don't go.
You don't know how far I went. All right. You get us. You're assuming I'm the accused now, and I'm saying you don't know. But so
guilty. I am.
You don't believe in due process.
I am the prosecutor. I am the jury. I am the judge. You are guilty of going too far down the rabbit hole of Facebook idiocy.
Objection.
Denied.
Overruled.
Denied.
So we've talked about Colin Kaepernick.
Sit down, prosecutor.
We've talked about Colin Kaepernick. We've talked about the anthem protests. Donald Trump jumped in on this now. In a big way.
He sure did. Just tonight.
Just tonight. You want to do this? Because I don't.
You know what? I don't, but I mean, this is... He jumps in and says, and I'm paraphrasing here, that any NFL player that disrespects our flag, those teams should pull that guy off the field, boot him out of the stadium, and say, you're fired. Right? Like,
very clever.
And actually, that's
the part you're not paraphrasing.
Right, actually I did less paraphrasing there than I thought. That's actually pretty accurate or pretty close to what he said. And now, listen, I'll say this. I'm not boycotting the NFL. It's just something that I enjoy a great deal. I understand that for progress, there has to be sacrifice. Trust me, I'm a student of the civil rights movement. I get it. But I think for the advancement of colored people, of the things that we need to sacrifice, the NFL, that's not where we're going to make a drastic change, right? Because this is how the NFL works, okay? If we sacrifice and we say, all right, if we boycott the NFL, right? Because not everyone's claiming to boycott the NFL,
all right,
on both sides of this, right? So let's just say all of this boycotting was successful. You do understand that these owners would be annoyed and pissed, but they'll shut it down. The NFL, they'll shut the league down. NFL, trust me, NFL owners, like, these guys are billionaires, right?
Yeah.
Billionaires by the billions they have. And
just owning a team makes you a billionaire because teams are worth $1 billion.
And so they could shut the league down, get rid of all of it. Most of these stadiums are on the cities anyway that they're in. So, all right, fine. All right, we'll walk away. We'll walk away before we give you what you want, right? And so everybody would be happy then, right? Like, the NFL is shut down. Look what we did. Okay, all right, well, great. So now I'd lose a major source of entertainment. I'm sure I could fill it and find it somewhere else. But what did we actually accomplish, right? Because here's the thing.
But Trump was not promoting.
No. Okay, listen.
All right.
Right, I'm talking about the people who are boycotting the NFL for whatever fucking reason.
I know you're angry on this, yes.
So, okay, you've got them to shut down the league. Guess what you've done? Like, you've put a dent in their ability to make money for a little bit, but most 90% of the owners in the NFL have huge revenue streams that will continue to make them large amounts of money. They don't really give a fuck. They'll be annoyed. They'll be pissed. This is a hobby, and a lot of them aren't good at it, but they made a lot of money. But ultimately, I almost slid a end of the deal in there. Ultimately, those guys are still going to be able to make shitloads of money. And you know what? None of that money will come into our inner cities. None of that money will go to the black community. I'm sure they will even figure out ways to make sure it doesn't come into the black communities or inner cities or urban settings or whatever you want to call it or however you want to veil it, right? At least at this point in time right now, you have a very small percentage of people who are making a very large amount of money, and some of those guys are at least putting money back into the community and trying to help these kids, right?
All
right.
So that's about the why you shouldn't protest the NFL.
No, I don't care. I mean, whether you do or you don't, I'm just telling you this is where, like, ultimately, what do you think? Like, I don't know what the fuck this boycott of the NFL is going to accomplish.
But I was talking about the Trump comment.
I know what you are, right? But I mean, like, to me, like, I understand that. But to me, the bigger issue is, what the fuck is the boycott of the NFL going to accomplish, right? What is it really going to accomplish? You want to see the league shut down? Do you really want to see the league shut down?
I'll tell you what it'll accomplish for me. It'll save my liver 14 more weeks of frustration because I'll be going to bars watching my Bills play badly.
Come on, but we'll figure out another way to keep drinking. Come on.
You know what? Fair enough. That void will get filled.
I mean, come on. We'll fucking fill it watching the ants race. I don't know. In terms of Trump, though, you know,
That's playing to the base again, right?
Right. That's all it is. It's pandering to the base. It's. I'm running out of topics other than North
Korea.
I'm losing on this. Here's something I could win on. Hey, anybody protesting the flag is
You're fired.
And so, you know, get those guys out of the NFL. And it's just like, all right, kick Colin Kaepernick while he's down. And, you know, I mean, it looks like Colin Kaepernick isn't going to play in the league again. Right. Look how many, like, the Indianapolis Colts are playing me and or you at quarterback right now. And Colin Kaepernick is going to be better than Cody Brissett whoever the fuck that kid is. Right. He's a 17th stringer from the Patriots. Right. That Bill Belichick gave up for a sack of peaches. That the Colts are now playing, and everyone's just like, oh, look how good he's doing. He threw for 100 yards, right, and could barely hand the ball off to Frank Gore, who's 70 goddamn years old, right? You mean to tell me that the Colts aren't better off with fucking Colin Kaepernick than fucking Jacoby Brissett? Get the fuck out of here. But the kid still sits on the sideline, which means that Colin Kaepernick's not going to play in the NFL again. Is it all because of his protests?
I mean, you've gone through this. The protest followed by the other social issues. And
it's the other
I don't vote.
Issues,
I wear wore these socks. I wear the Che Guevara T-shirt.
I don't know. And, I mean, the kid, I mean, he had had some injury issues. He had a decent year his last year, but the team was still fucking terrible. And I just, and part of, there's a part of me that something about him rubs me the wrong way in terms of his sincerity with all this, and that'll get me in trouble amongst the black left elite. But there's something about him that rubs me the wrong fucking way, and it's not because of the flag. It's just there's something about him that just isn't genuine to me. And I can point to other guys who I can say I can get behind that guy 100%. I can get behind this guy 100%, whether they kneel or stand or whatever. But with Colin Kaepernick, I get, like, his cause I can support, and he's done what we asked him to do, right? Put your money where your mouth
is. Yeah, absolutely.
He's done that, right? But there's still something about it to me that I have to wonder if there's a little bit about his whole contract situation where he was just being a little bit bratty, and then he had to figure out a way to not seem bratty, and then he got this, he was able to pull this cause out of his ass to get behind.
Well,
I mean, that's just my open, honest opinion.
All right, that's fair. All right, man. We should probably shut this down. We've been going for a while. We're
shutting it down.
All right.
We're shutting it down. We're doing it not live.
Not live.
We're not doing it live.
We are Whiskey Congress, at Whiskey Congress on all social media platforms. You probably know that by now. We are on iTunes, on YouTube. We'll keep it rolling. Thank you very much. Please get on iTunes and give us a rating. Give us a comment. We appreciate that very much.
Actually, don't.
No, you don't want to comment tonight.
You know what? I'm in a mood. I'm an ornery.
You
son
are.
Of
you are actually. Kind
I am
of in
an
mood.
Ornery son of a bitch right
you
now.
You are.
I started off good, but now you did. Now I'm ornery.
And for rare change, I don't think I caused it. Maybe I did.
No, you didn't.
Okay,
you
well,
no. Nope.
How about that?
You
did. All right, I did not get you pissed off this time.
I don't even know who did. I think it's the angry emotion from
the
that
angry
Disney.
Emoji in our studio, and the fact that my humidor or your humidor has been in my house and our
studio.
No,
I'm just glad I found it.
Oh, okay.
Because I genuinely was looking for it earlier, like tonight. And
that's
earlier,
hilarious to you, by the way. You're looking
right,
for it.
Like, I was looking for it before, like, you know, like I went on that road trip. I was gone, you know, Monday through Thursday or whatever. And just, and it was more just of a counting sort of thing. Like, where the fuck is my third humidor? And I look over and I'm like, son of a bitch, it's at Jim's
house.
It's
right here. So, right, let's see what's in there. Maybe we'll go smoke one of them. I don't know. We'll find out. To be continued on the next show. There's your tease.
That's where
we are out. All right. Good night.